So secret we can't talk about it.
What does that mean for America?
It's so secret we can't talk about it.
What does that mean for America?
I've got a vision for what I want to do for the country. See, I know exactly where I want to lead. It's so secret we can't talk about it.
What does that mean for America?
I've got a vision for what I want to do for the country. See, I know exactly where I want to lead. It's so secret we can't talk about it.
What does that mean for America?
I've got a vision for what I want to do for the country. See, I know exactly where I want to lead.
You were both in Skull and Bones, the secret society.
Hear it first on FirstAmendmentRadio.com and FirstAmendmentRadio.net, around the world and on satellite.
Roll away the dawn, roll away the dawn, and let me see the land of the free. Has anything changed at home? Sweet liberty, sweet liberty is in our hands. It's part of the plan, or is it a state of mind? Never forget.
You're listening to Jackie Patru and Sweet Liberty. And now, here's your host, Jackie Patru.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you for joining us tonight on Sweet Liberty. Today is Wednesday, of course, and it is the 28th of December in the year 2005. I hope you had a lovely Christmas, if you observe Christmas. If not, maybe just a family time, a holiday season so far, folks. I can't think of anything more important today than spending time with our family and with those that we love, regardless whether we observe the actual Christmas season or not, because regardless when he was born, the one we know as Jesus, there was a message, and a message of love that was brought into this world, and a message of truth. Our spiritual message tonight is a part of that. This is, we've done this many times, John chapter 18, and in verse, we'll start with 34. Jesus was talking to Pontius Pilate, and Pilate had entered into the judgment hall and called Jesus and said it to him, "Are you the king of the Jews?" I don't know how much truth is in this story, but there still is a message here. Jesus said, answered, he said, "Do you say this thing of yourself, or did others tell it you to you about me?" In other words, when Pilate asked him if he was the king of the Jews, and if I recall, the word Jew actually didn't even occur in the Bible until sometime in 1600s or whatever. But anyway, Pilate said, "Am I a Jew? Your own nation and the chief priests have delivered you to me. What have you done?" And Jesus answered, he said, "My kingdom is not of this world. If my kingdom were of this world, then would my servants fight that I should not be delivered to the Jews. But now is my kingdom not from hence." And Pilate said to him, "Well, are you a king then?" And Jesus answered, "You say that I am a king. Now listen to this, folks. To this end was I born, and for this cause came I into the world, that I should bear witness unto the truth. Everyone that is of the truth hears my voice. I came to bear witness unto the truth." And we've had many, many, many lies wrapped around the truth that was brought by Jesus and by other teachers, masters, as they call them. And we're going to discuss that a bit tonight with Alan Watt, our guest. And Alan, thank you for being here tonight.
Yes, it's a pleasure.
Always, thank you. When we talked earlier this evening, the one thing that I wanted to bring up, and you said that you believe that most Christians today realize that the birth of the one that we know of, Jesus, wasn't on the 25th of December. It is the winter solstice. And what brought this to my mind is that my sis and I were talking earlier, and I was explaining to her, I believe it was my sis, that the solstice starts on the 23rd. And the 23rd, 24th, and 25th, allegedly that the days stay the same length. And then on the 25th, of course, the days begin to lengthen again. And that is the old story about the god, going way back to Isis, and I don't know how many far back and how many gods they told this story about, that he was buried for 3 days and rose from the dead. And it's the myth of it is the fact that the days began to lengthen instead of shortening again. Yes?
Yeah, it's ancient. And of course, I think the summer solstice is its opposite. You see, that begins on the 22nd, I think, of June. And then it's the same thing with December. It's generally the 22nd or so of December. And that's when the sun is furthest from the equator, you know. And it doesn't go much further north for those 3 days as it hangs in the sky. And that's where the hanging god comes from. And they used to draw it north, south, east, and west in the sky. And they drew it as a cross. So the god hung on the cross as he was crossing the sky. And so when he was pretty stationary, he didn't go any further north for those 3 days. That was the death of the old god, the old year's god. And then when he started moving forward after Christmas, we call Christmas now, they all cheered and had their celebration for he was born again. So that's where that came from.
Mm-hmm.
But that predated Christianity by many, many thousands of years.
And the story was told in many ages under different religions, wasn't it, Alan?
Oh, pretty well every religion. There are different names for this, for the same scenario. You had the same thing with Semiramis, the wife of Nimrod, and Tammuz, the sun. And they had their Tammuz celebrations as the sun was born at that time of year. And then in Egypt, of course, they had the weeping midwinter, the weeping for Osiris, the death of Osiris, as he went. And the constellation, of course, was linked to Orion, which also goes down for 3 days and then starts to appear in all its glory, the full constellation, for those 3 days leading up to Christmas. So it's the same story over and over again, the death of the sun, really, and then the rebirth after 3 days as it crosses the sky. It's in every religion. And of course Horus was the sun who was reborn, the son of Osiris.
Mm-hmm.
So this is the same religion over and over. Yeah.
You know, the thought has entered my mind. I can remember when I was a teenager, you know, and going to the Lutheran church, wondering in my mind, why did he get himself hung up on that cross? Because he didn't have to. And I wondered if he really did. I don't know the history, the actual history of it, but I have read, you know, books, and it puts thoughts into your mind. For example, in the Bible, where, you know, it says that, you know, this, of course, happened at Easter, and I was telling you this evening, you know, in the Lutheran church, we did the Nicene Creed. I think the Catholics do the Apostles' Creed, but ours was the same way. I believe in God the Father Almighty and in Jesus Christ, His only Son, our Lord, who was conceived by the Holy Ghost, born of the Virgin Mary, suffered under Pontius Pilate, and was dead and buried. And 3 days he rose again and set, you know, came to sit on the right hand of God the Father Almighty. Well, you know, that story is just, it's etched into our minds.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's just etched into our minds. And I believe, you know, in the Bible, it talks about how they, you know, when they put him in the tomb, Joseph of Arimathea's, that the guards at the door fell asleep at the entrance.
Mm-hmm.
And then when they woke up, the stone was rolled away and he was gone. One of the books I read suggested that in the story where he said, "I thirst," that we're told that they put vinegar, you know, in his mouth on the sponge. Is it a possibility that he was given some type of a sleeping, like soma or something like that, that they were able to take him down so quickly? And and when the guards fell asleep, if all of this happened at all, Alan, possibly the guards were drugged.
This author has made millions on this, many, many authors.
Yeah.
And I think the Bajan Lincoln, the Messianic Legacy, etc., they go into all that stuff.
What are your thoughts on that?
I think it's nothing to do with what it appears to have to do with. It's always been an esoteric religion behind the exoteric.
Uh-huh.
And the exoteric is always given for the public consumption, to make them be well behaved in an orderly society, so that they can be controlled really by a small few who understand this. And every age has had religion to keep it in check. And when you realize that even when they're bringing in the New Age religion, as Michael Gorbachev has said in his own writings, towards a new civilization, he said we must create a new religion, even though he admits in the same book that he's an atheist. He are creating a new religion for the world, which will be based on earth worship. So they understand that they must always have a religion to keep the
people. Is that what the New Agers say, Father, Mother, God? Or that creator is asexual? I mean, where does that come from, Alan?
It comes from the again, it's the esoteric. People get lost when they get... It's like you're saying there, you get fixed in your mind when you're a child through repetition and indoctrination. And from then on, it's very, very... It's almost impossible for most people to break out of that and look back at it from the outside. In other words, what's been programmed into you will always make you think in a certain program direction. It limits you. And of course, in the esoteric religion that's always been here, it's they give you a beginning, which is really the goal of their end. And so they write it as a story. Because these priests for thousands and thousands of years know where they've been going. And so they give you a deity that everybody will try and emulate, or work towards, really, for their end product, which is almost here. And that's why in the esoteric religions, in all of them, it doesn't matter if it's Hinduism or Christianity or whatever, or Judaism, you find that the deity is male and female. It's the hermaphroditic deity. And that is where we're all heading towards, a hermaphroditic type of new creature, which they're going to call the Great Leap Forward.
Well, what they have planned.
Yeah, and it's here because they can do it now.
I know.
They can do it now. They can create any kind of life they wish right now. Yeah. But that's where they want to go with a new type of human creature for slaves, of course. The elite have always, in their own books that they're written for them or by them, have always said that they themselves will remain unchanged. But for the slave class, like Charles Galton Darwin in his book, The Next Million Years, in his book he states specifically that the elite ruling class, because they are running the ship of Earth.
He refers to them, the ruling class, as the masters.
That's right.
The masters will not
minority.
Yeah, be subjected to the same type of food as the subjects.
Yes. And so they would remain unaltered, so they could do the usual breeding by selection done by genealogists and priests, while the new slave race will be perfected in that it will be self-reproducing, basically. No doubt we'll put them the injection to start the process, but that would mean perfect control, you see. And I can envisage the day when you are, if you're a perfect slave, you will, your reward will be to have yourself duplicated as a child. You know.
I can't envisage that day. Well, I hear you.
Mm-hmm.
And I do understand that it is their intentions.
Yeah.
And I'm not saying it's never going to happen.
Uh-huh.
I guess maybe the reason that I won't do that, Alan, mm-hmm. is knowing how absolutely powerful our thoughts and our words are,
mm-hmm.
and even the ability to visualize. All of that together, if I dwelt on envisioning it,
yeah.
I would feel that I was part of helping them bring it into being. And I hold in my mind, and it isn't like hopefulness. I know that all things are possible, and they have been at this for a long, long time.
Yep.
And
they've actually been changing humanity for a long time.
I know they have.
Mm-hmm.
But
you see that the sperm count in the male gets issued every year by the United Nations, the World Health Organization. They make their announcement, and the Western male is only 25% fertile now compared to 1950. So it's already happening, whether they know it or not. You see.
Well, they're doing
or
that with the, they're doing that
not.
Messing with the hormones, aren't they?
Oh, they've been doing that since before I was born, yeah.
Uh-huh.
And I think inoculations were really part of the reason, you know, that was the reason they brought them out.
Uh-huh.
Was to target reproduction, because they had meetings in the 1800s and 1700s even about population reduction. People don't realize how far back the dominant minorities, they call them, have been meeting about this kind of stuff.
Explain the dominant minority as you did once before. That was very fascinating.
Well, the dominant minority are those who, if you can go back as far as Plato, who called them the guardians.
Who was it that wrote about this, though? You quoted him.
Yeah, it was Charles Galton Darwin.
No, it was somebody else. But that's okay.
No, he did write about it.
Okay, but there was somebody else you quoted. Mm-hmm. It wasn't Bertrand Russell, and I don't remember his name.
Mm-hmm. Well, the other one's H.G. Wells. He wrote about them, too. But definitely it's in Charles Galton Darwin's book.
Uh-huh.
The Next Million Years. He talks about the dominant minority.
And what
is
the dominant minority?
Well, he's one of the workers for them. The ones who rule the world economically.
And
see,
then
everything in the world runs on economics.
Okay, and then the ones behind them are the what?
Well, the ones behind them are, as they say, the guardian class, who hold the keys of the mysteries, as they call it, which means all knowledge and archives, the real archives and knowledge, not public libraries. And so they have the wisdom of the ages, meaning the sciences of the ages, including the science of ruling man, you see. And this goes back many thousands of years. They existed in Plato's day and before him. The ones who steer the ship of Earth, as they say. The
ones that we don't know about.
Yeah, the ones that... And they're never out in public. They're never in public view. They always have their front people, their helper class, as they call them, who take the heat. You know, they'll implement things in front of the public, but they'll take the heat for doing so. And these are the people that we all talk about, you know, the Rockefellers, etc. But they're again, in turn, they're answerable to their masters.
So it's the dominant minority that believe only in what am I trying to say here? This third dimensional world, that this is where they want to rule. But the ones
for eternity, eternal bodies,
and they don't believe in a higher being, that they are of the gods, right?
They believe that they are the higher beings.
Okay, but there's
They believe that they have they believe that they have spirit in them as well as soul.
Uh-huh.
And that's where the body, soul, and spirit.
But the class, the few behind them.
Mm-hmm.
I recall this in a conversation that we had on the air, where you said we were talking about this, and you said they don't. They believe that they are gods.
Well, they do.
Okay, but then the actual ones who are really in control know that man is a spirit being. And you said their greatest fear is that, you know, because of the religions, we're taught. I mean, you know, we're taught that, okay, God so loved the world, he gave his only begotten son. When I was a little girl, I laid in bed and wondered, you know, well, if Jesus was God's own son only, then who am I and what am I?
Mm-hmm.
And I've heard many Christians say, well, God knows that I'm just a weak sinner.
Mm-hmm.
And he, you know, forgives me. And that's because of Jesus' blood that was shed for me. Okay, I see that it has given people an out, Alan. I can't help it. I'm just a weak sinner. When in fact, the power that is within us is known by the hidden rulers behind the dominant minority.
Mm-hmm.
And you said their greatest fear is that enough people are going to wake up to the realization that that power does lie within us, and if enough people, and I ask you at that time, how many do you think it'll take? And you said, I don't think very many, because there aren't very many of them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So the ones really in control. So the ones that we believe are in control are more controlled in a sense, or as much controlled as we are.
Absolutely.
Uh huh.
Absolutely. There's no doubt. Even Carl Quigley mentioned that in his. In the Anglo-American establishment, he goes through the many of the well-known families that we are familiar. You know, their names pop up down through the last 300 years or so in positions of power in the U.S. and in England and Canada, and he mentions that those people work ceaselessly implementing various agendas, but he says they take them from higher up. It says the real people work behind the scenes, whose names are never known to the public. They work tirelessly, and their reward is knowing that they do wield the real power,
uh-huh.
Not the Rockefellers.
Right.
So yeah, this is how this is like everything in this world is run very similar to communism, because communism is only a branch of the same structure, and communism was run by fronts. Everything that you looked at was a front,
uh-huh.
And front groups and so on. And it's no different when you go to the main body, which is the ones who rule all of it, including the so-called capitalism and commerce, etc. The ones who work for them are all the front workers, the front organizations.
But the ones who rule capitalism, who rule the... quote, created the monetary system and all that, they're still not the ones who are in real control. They're just the workers.
That's right.
Okay.
Yeah, as you say in the esoteric, the head, the guy at the top is called the lazy boy.
Mm-hmm.
And the lazy boy is in French, well, be la, you know, it's male, female, it's a female, and Z. the letter Z is connected to the above and below. And boy is a lazy boy. In other words, he does no work.
And they made a chair called the Lazy Boy.
Yes.
A long time ago. I don't know if there's still one, but those recliner chairs.
They still make them.
Yeah. Alan, yeah. I'm going to try to put us on the speaker here.
Okay.
And let's see if everything is still okay. It's going to make a little bit of a noise. Okay. Can you hear me okay?
Yeah.
Oh, good. Oh, and you sound good and clear, too.
Okay.
Okay. Well, you know, that one broadcast we had that night,
mm-hmm.
and you were talking about that, it takes us out of, in a sense, it takes us out of the doom and gloom and the despondency and the hopelessness that this is a plan that is, quote, going to succeed.
Mm-hmm.
And, I thought about this. I thought, well, Christmas is over. A new year is beginning. And, of course, a new year, it marks, evidently, something important, but the next day is like every other day. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
At 12 midnight, and everybody says, Happy New Year, and everything's still the same.
Yeah.
But in my mind, I thought, I would love it if tonight we could talk about the possibility and the potential, Alan.
Mm-hmm.
Do you understand what I'm saying?
I think, yeah, but I've been there before.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But it's been a long time.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, let's see, I'm not a cheerleader for the world.
I'm not talking about cheerleading for the world.
And we won't save the world. You know, that's another thing, too. And we won't save the system because the system is there. We have no say in the system. It's complete. So what's going to come out of this and who will come out of this has a bit of a question mark on it yet. But there's no doubt that we'll go through a tremendous chaos. We're already we're starting down the brink of the cup going into it now. They hope to collapse the system through a controlled collapse, like controlled demolitions, which they're very good at. And then, of course, by controlling it, bring out the new system, the new world order. And this is probably a very dicey time for them because they have to use so much marketing strategies. They do hire thousands of think tanks, which are marketing think tanks.
Yes.
To market all propaganda to the public via the media and the news. To try and mold our minds along certain paths they want us all to follow so that we'll obey properly properly in the proper direction when we're told. So it's a very tricky part for them, and that's why there's for every bit of intelligence that breaks out from independent sources, there are agencies of counterintelligence also go into action and muddy the waters by putting out there things there about serpent people and dragons and stuff like that, which is incredible, but it's working on a lot of people, you know. And for everybody who brings out a story of 9/11 and how the towers came down, etc., and the fact that everybody knew it, and the BBC even admitted that they'd warned the US agencies this was going to happen, we know. I mean, anybody with reason has that fixed in their head now. They don't have to watch movies about it. But now they're churning out more movies about it, which are only there to muddy the water. Because they all have little bits in it that the other movies didn't. And they have you talking endlessly about something you should have filed away in your head by your own reason and your own reasoning powers and said, wait a minute, they did it. I'll move on from here. You see? So the counterintelligence forces are out there on the shortwave too, to muddy the waters of reality. And no one can give you your reasoning powers except yourself. You're born with them if you care to use them, but you can give them away, and you can give that power to the media to do your thinking for you. And lots of people, as Brzezinski said, have already done that, have been trained to do that. But Albert Pike, and the Pope of Freemasonry, said it was up to the individual to use the individual, your power of reason. You must rely upon your power of reason at all times, regardless of all the information around you. And he said that those who will not use the power of reason for themselves are therefore just meat on the table and beasts of burden by choice and consent. In other words, to be used as slaves. So yeah, there's a counterintelligence out there big time to muddy the waters, and so we have so much disinformation along with truth. So throw it all out to go back to the standardized media version. That's why counterintelligence.
Years ahead of the dominant media, FirstAmendmentRadio.com and FirstAmendmentRadio.net, around the world and on satellite. If you'd like to get a copy of this program, there are a few ways that we can help you. You may subscribe at FirstAmendmentRadio.com for only $45 a month, and you'll receive an MP3 CD weekly of all of our programs. As a bonus, we'll send you a password for our audio archives online. That's a $15 value. Or you may request any month of any program on one MP3 CD for a minimum donation of only $25. Or any single program on tape, MP3 CD, or CD for only $15. You may do all of this online at FirstAmendmentRadio.com. Just follow the instructions to make a donation or subscribe. You may also adopt an hour of your favorite program. Please don't forget that most of the programs on FirstAmendmentRadio.com are listener-supported. Don't do Internet? Then call 559-781-3773, and we'll be honored to help you. Thank you from all of us here at FirstAmendmentRadio.com.
Now listen to me. The Bible says, render unto Caesar that which is Caesar's. I want you to know that a corporation is Caesar.
Government takeover of the church. This DVD is the most powerful tool we have for waking up those asleep in the pews. The scripture calls for his people to come out of her. The corporate church is the apostate church, the whore that rides the beast. Get this DVD for a donation of $25 from FirstAmendmentRadio.com. Make copies and give them away to your corporate church friends and loved ones. The truth will make them free. They will watch the DVD, Government Takeover of the Church. Order online today at FirstAmendmentRadio.com or call 559-781-3773. Who will tell them if not you?
Since the beginning of time, kings have sought it, nations have fought for it. It has been traded, it has been borrowed, it has been purchased, it has been stolen. There's a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and to our posterity. Invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188 or visit discountgoldandsilvertrading.net. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cedarstrom, and regular guest, world-renowned economist Robert Chapman, right here on FirstAmendmentRadio.com at 4 p.m. Eastern or 1 p.m. Pacific Time. Visit discountgoldandsilvertrading.net or call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. Toll free, 1-800-375-4188.
You're listening to FirstAmendmentRadio.com, Galaxy 13, Channel 16, Audio 7.70, and worldwide on the Internet at FirstAmendmentRadio.com.
All right, folks, we're back again with you. Alan Watt, our guest tonight. So, Alan.
Yeah.
We've talked in the past, you have, about the individual, the possibility, the potential in each and every one of us.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes when I would like to have this conversation, for some reason it seems that you would rather not have it, but there's so much more than what our eye sees. There's so much more than the plan that these creatures have for this physical world. And I would like, if you would, to speak on that tonight.
Well, I don't think everyone is capable of coming through, number one.
I didn't say that.
Yeah. You said everyone, but a lot of people have chosen where they want to be, you know. And only those who've done their own soul searching, I think.
Good. Okay, thank you. Thank you.
You know, I don't think what we call spirit is something that's just there. I think it's something you have to look for, you know. And, of course, that was the old esoteric religion, still is, actually. Yeah.
What?
That the old secret was that all life was composed of body and soul, and soul was an animating principle, but it wasn't completion until you had spirit join it, you know. And even the ancient Greeks, who were all taught, all the aristocracy were taught in Egypt, who had it from elsewhere, of course, did believe that was the journey of an individual, was to, that the soul hungered for spirit, and that was the journey for truth. And the truth has no conditions. In other words, you can't drag things along as you're seeking truth. You almost have to cleanse yourself, in a sense, and be open, because there's partial truth and there's cloudy truth, and that's all due to dragging something along with you on a new path. So the soul would seek out spirit, as they called it. Now, these could be allegories too, but when a true seeker had found it, then spirit joined. Not anybody's spirit, but the one that was for you, as though the Creator made a spirit for every soul. And of course, that's where the old term soul searching came from. That soul searching was the animating principle that's within every life. And the soul, on its journey through earth here, has now joined matter and animates it towards seeking truth, which is spirit. And when they had sought it with all sincerity, then spirit joined. And that was the soulmate, and that was the soul mating. That's where it comes from. So you reach perfection in this reality, and I'm not talking about longevity or superpowers. I'm talking about perfection on your journey when you had attained all three, when three merged together.
What is perfection to them or to this?
Perfection was when you now knew that part of you that always seemed to be missing was united within you. You see, that's what it always really meant. I think many people do go through life, they know there's just something wrong, or they're always thirsting for something outside of the material. Those who rule the world try to fill that gap in with making you rush after toys and things to buy, etc., all to keep you from looking for anything else. And that's why all things that which we purchase, that the ad show has made us smile, we're not smiling for very long. Now we're unsatisfied so quickly, and we're always looking for the next thing, rather than stop and reevaluate everything and say, what is it we're really looking for? You know, the system tries to stop you getting to that stage where you just come to a complete standstill and think it out, because truth. Sometimes it's a veiled way of saying it's that spirit that was made for you, but it's out there somewhere, and it will not join you until you've reevaluated and sort of cleansed yourself. It's almost as though you go into a navel-gazing self-absorption state, but you certainly will reevaluate your life, you know. And there's a sort of process I think a person goes on the way there, on that journey. And that was perfection, knowing and having the wisdom that came with it.
In other words, full spiritual consciousness.
Yes, it gave you an awareness over whole vast areas which you perhaps didn't have before. And also a knowingness, a realization about things which were instant. You understood things very easily, whereas before you had false ideas, false conclusions, false programming in a way, and that hampered your progress. But now it's much easier. So that was a person's journey, and everybody really, in ancient times, said that everyone was here on a journey. This is a journey through life, you know. But it wasn't just through the material for the material's sake and having children and dying, etc. It was to actually find yourself, which was that part of you which had been made for you. But
what does that mean? A part of us that had been made for us?
Yeah.
Well, I don't... like there's a disconnection someplace?
Pretty well, uh-huh.
Could it be that the disconnection is simply in our mind, Alan, because we're not aware of the connection?
You could put it that way in one sense, because most people are making choices all through their life.
We all are, not most people. We're all always making choices.
Yeah, and they don't realize that every choice they're making is taking them a certain path. Most people live, work, and die never really understanding what's really going on about anything. And that's a sad comment, but it's true. And they can be very, very nice people, and their family love them, and all that kind of stuff. But it's never dawned on them that there was anything evil within the world, running the world. It never dawned on them that the system that they were born into was totally, totally different from the way that same system trained them to look at it. They had never realized any of that, you know. These thoughts simply didn't come to them. And so they die never knowing.
You know, metaphysically, it is said that this third dimensional world is illusion. And that's something maybe we could intellectualize, but very difficult to actually grasp a concept of. And
well, I'll tell you, metaphysically, it was meant, and it was put out there and taught out there to form a sense of disassociation, which I've seen in many people who've been through.
But what I mean, what I was going to follow this with, Alan, is that when we begin to learn the truth of this whole physical world and the system in it, we begin to see the illusion that was created for us.
We should. We would hope.
The whole, everything we've ever, almost everything that we have ever been taught, been a lie.
Oh, yeah.
And so, in a sense, we have lived in an illusion.
And also, the illusions turn to delusions, because a delusion is a fixed false belief. That's the definition of it. So illusions can create delusions. And as long as enough people have been trained the same way in the illusions, then the majority of people are now deluded. That's what that would come to.
Well, it seems that down throughout the ages, something has stopped their plan. And maybe it was what you said a long, long time ago. It isn't going to take very many, because there aren't very many of them.
Yeah.
And I've wondered, because you know the book that we call the Bible, that is called the Bible, which I understand Bible means book, biblio.
It means other things too.
Yeah. But, I lost my train of thought when I took myself down that cul-de-sac in the Bible. Shoot, never mind, it'll come back to me.
Yeah, but and as I say, I think we have to even think outside of the box, we always. And it's possible to do. It is possible to think outside of the box. and not use any of the tools they've given us.
Right.
You know, and unfortunately, holy books of any denomination are their tools.
Right. However, according to what I understand, I don't know if this is true, but they have to give us truth.
Well, they can give us truth, but it's always so veiled.
It's always mixed in with all the lies.
It's always veiled. It's always veiled so heavily.
But there are some simple truths, Alan.
Pardon?
There are some simple truths.
Oh, simple ones.
And what I'm saying is that in the book that we call the Bible, there are truths.
Yeah.
We need to be discerning. I talk to people who say, oh, yeah, part of the Bible is symbology. You know, because you just can't take it literally. But then there's certain things and stories, and I call them stories because I don't know the truth of any of the, quote, stories that we've been given in the Bible.
Mm-hmm.
But the simple truth that we've been given, allegedly, that they attribute, if you would, to the one that we know as Jesus, simply, for example, do unto others as you would have others do unto you.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Alan, the whole world would be working if that were in the process, if each and every single one of us treated others as we would want to be treated, not as we're treated, but as we would want to be treated, their plan would fail.
Yeah,
that's one of the
They also want the populace to understand these truths.
So they want them to?
Yeah.
Why?
So that they will be well behaved while the elite do things so covertly behind them, behind the scenes. Because it knows, see, society can only work on certain basic rules, and those are the basic rules you're talking about.
But people, we don't live by those rules.
No, but society, we still have
that's
them
the rule.
In place, basically.
Don't
we know
see that
are.
As a rule.
Mm-hmm. And these guys.
Sure, I know what a maxim is, but I see that if we see, because think about this. Think about the people. I think of Children Family Services a lot.
Yeah.
Think about those people that work for the bureaucracies.
Yeah.
If they were treating people as they would want to be treated, Alan, that whole bureaucracy would fall apart. Because nobody could do what they're doing. That's what I'm saying.
Well, everybody said they were supposed to be doing... there'd be no money to hire people to work in those places.
Yeah, I know that. But
see, everything is coercion in a monetary system.
I know that.
Where you're given no choice but to use their money, and you are given no choice today.
Fine, however, a person who works in a bureaucracy, let's say there was one whole big, huge bureaucracy called Children Family Services. Okay? And everybody that they hired, no matter how small-minded, mean-minded they seem, because those are the people they hire, if those people got into that position and they went into somebody's home and they see that that home's not a whole lot different than theirs, but they don't write up these terrible reports because, see, they get paid for how many children are stolen out of the homes and et cetera, et cetera. If they wouldn't do that, Alan, that whole bureaucracy would fall apart. It couldn't exist. Do you see what I'm saying?
Yeah, I know that. But as I say, none of this would we know all that, but you could never do it in just one bureaucracy. You'd have to literally do
I'm
away.
Just using one as an example.
Yeah, you'd need to do away with the money. Then all of the system would have to go. You can't have some things as they are.
How can you do away with the money? You know what you said? You said this a long time ago, too. When enough people understand that monetary system, it'll collapse of itself.
Well, it would.
That's what I'm talking about, Alan.
You see, the choice is you either go along with the money system, which is part of the policy maker, you see, for the planet, leading us to we know where they're leading us. They've told us often enough. And that's a choice, you know. Or we can literally all stop in our tracks. And it would take that. It would take people stopping in their tracks, not driving to work, not going along with it, and shutting everything down, you know. That's truly what it would take. But we are talking about a kind of a miracle in that sense. But that's what it would take for people who realized that was the only way to literally stop the system. Because you can't have parts of the system and expect some other parts to change. It won't work that way. Money in the world is all powerful. It's all powerful. It runs every country. It runs the lives of every individual,
including you.
Everybody. And as I said, we're given no choice.
Yeah.
You can't sit in your land. They come along demanding taxes. They won't take rabbit skins anymore.
Let's take that as an example.
Mm-hmm.
The people who are in the government, local government,
mm-hmm.
state government.
Yeah.
I don't know. Forget federal government. I'm talking down to the individual.
Uh-huh.
I had a conversation with one of our county commissioners that one day. I told you about this.
Mm-hmm.
Said this so nonchalantly. I had called him, left a message. He called the next day, apologized for not returning my call quicker, but they were out seizing a home.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Taxes.
Mm-hmm.
And he said it so nonchalantly.
Yeah.
And I said, oh my God, Walt, isn't that a shame?
Mm-hmm.
He said, what? I said, taking somebody's home because they can't pay their taxes.
Yeah.
He said, well, we got to do something or nobody would pay their taxes.
Yeah.
Well, okay, this is the example I'm talking about. Mm-hmm. And this may sound like la-la land to you, Alan, but this is what I'm talking about. This man, who is a county commissioner, says, wait a minute. Something's real wrong here. What are we doing? These people have paid for their home. It's mortgage-free. They don't have the money to pay the taxes. Are we going to steal their home out from under them? I'm saying, Alan, and I know this sounds really maybe la-la land or esoteric or whatever you want to call it, what I'm saying is that if all of us did unto others as we would have others do unto them, to us,
mm-hmm.
we couldn't do that. We couldn't do that, Alan.
But how are we going to get all people to do that?
You said yourself it isn't going to take very many.
Yeah, but...
Because there aren't very many of them, Alan.
I don't think...
I'm not saying how are we going to get people to do that.
Mm-hmm.
We aren't going to get people to do anything.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we can have conversations,
yeah.
And maybe somebody listening starts thinking and says,
mm-hmm.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, that's all you can do is bring them to a certain...
That's right.
...understanding.
That's right.
The system, one way or another, the whole system is going to change. Totally.
Would begin to collapse, Alan.
And it will either be, come out, what will come out will be either their new system.
So just for fun,
mm-hmm.
we'll say that everybody listening to this broadcast tonight, maybe there's 50, 60, 70, maybe suddenly they get it, Alan.
Uh-huh.
Oh my God, that makes sense. And they start looking at themselves,
mm-hmm.
and they begin to treat others.
Mm-hmm.
They would want to be treated. Now, there's two sides to this coin. Because Jesus said, you know, love your neighbor as yourself. You remove yourself from the presence of people that are not treating you the way you're willing to treat them. And so why would we allow ourselves to be treated less? So we just remove ourselves from that person's presence.
Mm-hmm.
But that is exactly what I'm saying. So let's mm-hmm. say that 60 or 70 people, and there's a lot more, I'm sure, that aren't listening to this broadcast, that at least think about this and make an attempt to live that way, even when it's some little thing you do that nobody's even around.
Yeah.
Like, remember I told you when I went grocery shopping?
Yeah.
And I didn't put that basket into that thing. I just shoved it up against the snowbank. Mm. I got in my car and I thought, that was really a rotten thing to do. I could have taken that around and put it with... I just had to go around the snowbank.
Yeah.
And it's looking at ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
Looking at our... Not just what we're doing, Alan, but when we have these emotions going on. Mm-hmm. Anger, upset, fear, want to get revenge on somebody who did something to us.
Mm-hmm.
Take a look at ourselves.
Well, know thyself is always the...
Keep looking. Keep examining.
Yeah.
Keep questioning. Why did I do that?
Mm-hmm.
Why do I feel this way? Where is it coming from?
Mm-hmm.
You see what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
And we just begin being that, treating other people as we would want other people to treat us. You know what I think?
Uh-huh.
I think it would all start to collapse. And I don't know what would happen to the monetary system,
mm-hmm.
but as you said yourself, if enough people begin to understand it, it would collapse of itself.
Yeah, it would. It would take a tremendous reevaluation of...
Of course it would. We'd be reduced, oh my God, to bartering, Alan.
Well, here's the choice right now.
Like Adolf Hitler did in Germany.
Well, when you leave Eden, and Eden's an allegory for the natural state, there's only one path out of Eden, and that's through science, you know.
I don't know. What does that mean?
And it's through so-called altering our environment to change ourselves, to suit ourselves. And, of course, ultimately, the sciences, as they've always said in esoteric Freemasonry, will create that which was left, or recreate that which was left imperfect.
Okay, you know what?
Yeah.
You just said a whole mouthful.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm going to try to write it down.
Yeah.
Eden, the gate out of the Eden is science.
The path is one path, one direction, yeah.
Gate out of Eden. Okay. You know what I'd like to do?
Yeah.
I'd like to pick this up next Wednesday.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Because I'm not understanding this, and I really would like to.
Mm-hmm.
Gate out of Eden is science.
Yeah, the path. The path out of Eden. There's only one path leads out of it.
The path. Okay. And Eden is an allegory.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And that has to do with something we were talking about.
Yeah, it's a natural state.
A natural state. All right, oh, good. I've made the notes. I'm actually going to...
But you'll lose it, though.
No, I got it right here on my little notepad.
Uh-huh.
I'm not going to lose it. Because every time we say we're going to pick something up next week, or tomorrow, when we used to do, you know, 3 days in a row, we couldn't pick it up. I would really like to pick this up, because you're saying that it relates to what we were talking about just now?
Yeah.
Okay, good. Because we're out of time here. And I want to wish our listeners, folks, just a Happy New Year. I mean, that is so trite. So I'm not going to say that. But peace and joy and love. And maybe that sounds trite, but I mean that from all of my heart, because I believe that that is our natural state.